Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the JewelCast. We've only been gone for about 2 months. I hope you didn't miss us too much. It's 8 p.m. on June 27th, 8 p.m. Pacific. This might be the latest we've ever started a recording, but it's still bright outside, so I'm not going to... I kind of like this, actually. We'll try to record a couple more times this summer, especially after free agency strikes, but for now, we've got a lot to talk about. So... We are through the NHL draft. We are through the Stanley Cup playoffs, obviously. And we've already gotten maybe the biggest news of the offseason for the Kings. So we'll go ahead and launch right into it. Tonight I am joined, I believe, by Sarah right now. Sarah, are you there? We'll give her one more minute to join. So we are, if you've read the post leading up to our podcast, or if you're checking out the description in hindsight, you know that tonight we're going to go through the Ilya Kovalchuk signing. We're going to talk a little bit about how that affects the Kings' off-season plans, including free agency, but also the impending decisions that they face with various free agents. We're also going to talk about the NHL awards, Andrei Kopitar coming off his second career Selke Trophy, and a respectable third-place Hart Trophy finish. And then we are going to head into a little bit of discussion about the draft, the prospect pool as it stands, and specifically development camp, which kicked off just this week. And then a little bit about the latest Hall of Fame news, and finally a little bit of recapping what went on during the 2017-2018 season. Try to get our callers on air. Thank you for your patience. Okay, I think we're good now. Sarah, are you there?
Am I real now? Do I exist?
Hallelujah. We haven't had a technical difficulty in like 3 episodes.
I'm real. That's exciting.
Yeah. It's good to hear your voice and not a really, really horrific silence on the other end. So I think we are ready to go. Now that we've wasted enough of our listeners' time, let's talk about Ilya Kovalchuk. We'll see. I know Robin has already written on the site about her opinions on the signing, some of the pros, some of the cons. And if she does call in, we'll have her sort of defend those a little bit. But Sarah, I want to get your take. What are your initial thoughts on the agreement to sign Ilya Kovalchuk for the next 3 years?
You know, I was surprised first off because I knew you know the rumor had been out there that they were talking to him, but I'm still kind of like, oh, the Kings just aren't going to do anything. So the fact that they did it and they just sort of snuck it out there in the middle of the draft, like that was fun. I like it. I definitely like, you know, Robin, like you said, Robin outlined a lot of the cons. You know, I definitely understand the points that a lot of people are making. Like, is this contract going to look great in 3 years when he's, what, 38, 39 or something? I should be able to do that math. Is it going to look great? Maybe. Maybe not. Who knows? But, you know, the fact that they were able to get someone who, you know, is a proven scorer without having to give up, you know, anyone who we already have or anyone who the team is, you know, high on as a prospect, I think kind of outweighs the, you know, a lot of the potential negatives. You know, I'd rather have him than potentially lose, you know, Adrian Kempe or Mike Amadio or, you know, Jared Anderson Dolan or something just because they wanted to add somebody. So I'm into it. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I think the biggest positive, aside from Kovalchuk's, I guess, ceiling, which we'll talk about in a bit, is the ability to get a player like this without giving anything up. And it's we talk about the risk of making a move like this, of saddling your cap with this kind of money for a few years. But I know that we've, among our staff, we've had sort of, I don't want to say disagreements, but sort of varying degrees of opinions on how much the Kings should be all in right now, trying to win a Stanley Cup as opposed to preparing for the future, especially with Drew Doughty's contract coming up to its probable renewal, and with Anže Kopitar signed to big money, and with various free agents hitting the market soon. There's talk about whether the Kings do need to start retooling or whether they should go for it with the core they have, and this is a clear signal that I think the Kings are going for the second. The fact that they could have gotten, you know, a Max Pacioretty or a Jeff Skinner by giving up current assets, someone younger, someone that maybe would have been under team control a little bit longer, or at least could have been re-signed to a longer contract than the one they gave to Ilya Kovalchuk. The problem, of course, is you're giving somebody up. And if the Kings believe that this team is good enough to compete, once you add a first line scorer, then it makes sense what they're doing here. Would you have preferred to see them hold out a little bit and try to make a trade such as the one that was rumored for Max Pacioretty?
You know, I don't think so, especially because we know that what, you know, the rumor is that what Montreal wanted back in return, they want a defenseman. And I know that, you know, Jake Muzzin and Alec Martinez are both always permanently on the Kings fan chopping block for trade, you know, potential trade bait. But I don't think that the team is really in a position to give up either of those, you know, at this point. So, you know, I wouldn't have, I feel like that trade could have gone poorly, because you add a scorer and then you take away on your back end, if that is indeed what they were going to be doing for that trade.
Yeah, and I think of the two, I don't think anybody's arguing that Martinez is the easier piece to give up, but if I'm Montreal, I'm insisting on Jake Muzzin, you know, full stop, because Martinez, he can eat minutes on your blue line, but they've already got you know, your Carl Alsner, the guy who can block shots and eat minutes and play defense and doesn't really drive possession too much. I don't think that Montreal is, especially for a guy who is a proven scorer aside from whatever troubles he had last year, I don't see them just taking, you know, Martinez in a second or whatever Kings fans would be willing to offer. So it is definitely a rumor killer, and that's why I put as the second expected topic here. Well, that's no fun, because a lot of the rumors that we were looking forward to sort of talking about leading into free agency and maybe beyond are going to be scuttled by this Kovalchuk signing. So let's hold off on the rumors for at least five more minutes while we keep talking about Ilya. What are your expectations for him next year?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, though, you know, obviously he's spent plenty of time in the NHL, so I don't think that the adjustment back to, you know, the smaller sized rink is going to be huge. You know, just watching him perform in the Olympics and in international competition, you know, he clearly still has it. It's not like he's just kind of chugging along and getting a lucky goal or two. There's an article from Rob Volman, everyone's favorite numbers dude, kind of breaking down the like projected points for Kovalchuk coming back from the KHL, yeah. Like so looking at the points that he's scored over there and how that translates to the NHL. And he says that the most realistic outcome is about 56 points, which if we can get a dude to score 50 some points, great. You know, there weren't too many, weren't too many other people on the Kings getting to that point last year. And, you know, if he, you know, is going to be the first line left wing and he is going to play with Kopitar, even if Kopitar has like a down season from last year, you know, I think that they should play fairly well together. You know, if he gets more than that projected amount, even better. But I don't think, you know, I think it may take him a little time to like gel with his new teammates and, you know, that people always kind of say it takes people about like 20 games or so to really, you know, form cohesiveness to the team and get to know their line mates and everything. So, you know, is he going to start out the game one of the season with a hat trick? I don't think so, but, I think that he should be fine, and it should be fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's easy to try and lump this in with, and I'm guilty of this. I used it for part of my description and part of my piece about Kovalchuk, but it's very easy to lump this in with the moves that the Kings have made for older players over the last few years. It seems like at least once a season they're going out and grabbing Vinny LeCavalier or Jerome McGinley or Mike Camilleri. And Camilleri is maybe the most comparable in terms of age and in terms of, oh, we actually think this guy could skate on the first line rather than, you know, someone like McGinley who, yes, he skated on the first line, but he wasn't expected to pull a ton of weight down the stretch. But it's a different animal entirely because you haven't seen this guy play in the NHL in 5 years, and because he has been this good this recently, you know, Jerome McGinley and Vincent LeCavalier have scored more points in their careers, and they've had really excellent individual years as well, but Kovalchuk is the only one where it's sort of reasonable or at least feasible to expect that again. And maybe it's just worth really quickly going over the numbers. 816 points in 816 career games, but his last full season was 2011-2012, 83 points, 37 goals in 77 games. He also did play the lockout season and scored 31 points in 37 games. Since going to Russia, he put up three seasons, which were right around a point per game, and in the last two, he's easily exceeded that mark. He's also scored more than half a goal a game in that time. So the offense is there. He's the Olympic MVP, which is the main thing in a lot of these headlines. Say what you want about the level of competition this year in the Winter Olympics, but there is no way to say that this is someone who is over the hill. He might be past his prime, but there's at least the chance that he's going to come in and score, you know, his 30 goals, and there's a very reasonable chance that he's going to come in and score his 50 points. So what that sort of leads us to before we transition to sort of the other names that have been floating around is the expected role for Kovalchuk. He's going to play on the power play. It sounds like all indications are he's going to play on that top line with Kopitar and I would assume Brown. Where else can you put him, Sarah? Are you going to try him with Jeff Carter if you're John Stevens? Are you going to move him around? Or are you going to just say, hey, you can skate with Andre as long as you want?
I think I just put him there as long as he wants. I think there's a, you know, if for some reason he's not gelling there, because they've certainly tried to play other players alongside Kopitar and like haven't been able to have success, you know, then I think you can start shuffling things around and see how he plays with Carter or whatever. But I think that top line spot is his to lose. Unlike last season when the Kings signed Mike Camilleri and we're all like, oh, well, there's our top line of vintage Kings, Camilleri, Kopitar, and Brown. And then Mike Camilleri came in and did not win that spot, you know, I don't really think there's much danger of Kovalchuk coming in and then the team being like, I'm fairly certain they did their due diligence in making sure that he's actually going to fit and not get bumped out for like, oh, I don't know, a first year rookie. I think that spot's his.
Sure. Yeah. And when we're looking at Kovalchuk too, and hearing now that the Kings were sort of his first choice all along. He had the Instagram post ready with his kids in Kings jerseys. He's clearly looking to sort of make a splash here. The main sort of reason that was explained beyond, you know, whatever Kovalchuk initially wanted was that the Kings were the only team willing to go to a third year, which doesn't strike me as a massive gamble, but it is one where if you see Kovalchuk take a huge drop, or he comes and he's not that effective, it is longer than you would like to hold on to the guy. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how it works out, and I do think that the floor is a lot higher than I think people expect. So with that said, Kovalchuk signed for 3 years, I want to say $6.25 million a year, and what that sort of leaves now is very little room for anything else. Patrick Urrutia, Jeff Skinner, among the rumored names. We're also hearing about Artemi Panarin, his desire to go to teams in LA, Florida, and New York. That's obviously a different animal because you're looking to make a big trade for him. Is there any way that we should be discussing this, Sarah? Is that even possible to get a guy like Panarin on this team?
I mean, I think it's possible in the same way that like I could get drafted to the NWHL like next week or something. Like it's possible, but I think that what you have to give up in return is what you have to give in return, and B, a guy like Panarin, you know, he needs a new contract next year. That contract is going to be massive. Like the Kings already have a $10 million guy in Anze Kopitar. If they manage to get it done with Drew Doughty, he's absolutely going to go for that. You know, can a team have three $10 million players? I don't think so. You'd have to lose something significant, in order to make the trade work, and B, in order to make the money work. Like, is it really fun to dream about? Absolutely. Like, that would be nightmarish for other teams. But realistically, I don't know how you make it work without losing other players who then you have to find a way to replace. And I don't know what replacements are available in the system that can step up yet.
Yeah, and the asking price has to include like Vilardi and Toffoli or a Muzzin, something along those lines. And there's no one else in the system that is comparable in terms of trade value. So, you know, maybe it's a true test of where the Kings are really going for it. And if you do give up someone like Toffoli, the money sort of evens itself out a little bit. But it's like you said, it's tough to imagine the Kings signing a beyond this year. And the Kings have traded for scoring forwards for a single year before, and the results have been mixed, to say the least. So as much as I'd like to keep talking about the rumors, I think we're going to have to scale down a bit, and we'll probably do that once free agency starts. In terms of the other guys that are going to be topics of conversation going forward, it's the Kings' impending free agents. And the first one is Tobias Rieder, who has been announced the Kings are not going to qualify him and not going to re-up him before he hits the market. You think this is a mistake, letting Rieder go?
No. I wanted to see more from him. He has the speed, but like, you know, it was somewhat of a limited sample size, but I just didn't see a reason there to extend him, especially at what the cap hit it was going to be somewhere north of $2 million. And I remember reading that in his last contract negotiations with Arizona, I think that went to like arbitration and was kind of ugly. And I think the Kings probably just wanted to avoid all of that entirely. I mean, he had 6 points in 20 games, which I guess is kind of not, you can't ask for too much more, but I'm not sad about it. Also, I'll stop being a short guy wearing number 10 and thinking that like I had a brain seizure and Mike Richards was back. I don't think they're losing anything. I'd much rather see that roster spot be open to, you know, giving, you know, maybe this is finally Johnny Brodzinski's year. You know, I'd rather see someone from within the system, or, you know, maybe they go find a depth forward in free agency or something. But I don't think there was anything wrong with moving on from him.
I think we really should have known as soon as Reeder took number 10 that this was not going to end the way he wanted it.
No, it's a curse. That number, none of them have worked.
Yeah. So on that note, we'll keep talking about it. We're trying to get Robin looped in now. She is she has called in, so we'll go ahead and get her take as well. But for now, the way it shapes up for the Kings from a cap perspective is that the salary cap has increased to $79.5 million heading into 2018-19. The Kings currently have about $3 million worth of cap space, which is not a ton, to say the least. And the expectation is that the Kings are going to be pretty quiet heading into July 1st. The forward situation, they're letting Reeder walk. Torrey Mitchell as well is not expected to come back, making room for a guy like Gabe Vilardi to make the jump. On defense, the Kings are expected to, we're not sure about Kevin Gravel or Christian Follin, but they do have six defensemen if you include Daniel Brickley. So let's talk about the plan. And for that, Robin, I believe you are on now. So hello, and what do you think the Kings should do on July?
Hello. In terms of what? Do what?
Exactly. Do you think they should be trying to shore up any depth positions, or would you prefer to just let them sit back until the dust settles on some of the bigger names?
Well, let me tell you something. Anybody who's followed me on Twitter knows what drum I've been banging, which is essentially the Max Pacioretty drum. That has nothing to do with agency, but as I pointed out in the little article that I dropped yesterday about 24 hours ago, there's really nothing for them in free agency. I mean, sure, you could probably take a flyer and declare if he's willing to take about $1 million, but otherwise, there's really nobody for them in free agency.
Yeah, tell me more about Duclair. Like, he sort of fits into a pretty specific category of free agent, which is the guy who has underachieved in the eyes of most, but at least has potential to score more. And maybe that's something that Reeder was, albeit a little more expensive. Do you think Duclair is someone who can potentially make a difference in this team, or is it just sort of a matter of, well, let's increase the competition?
It's really hard to say. He had one really good year with Arizona, but he was also shooting at like almost 20%. Don't really know where his true talent level lies. I mean, he also has like a really good World Junior Championship, so maybe he's just not quite equipped to handle NHL level competition. That said, he's still pretty young. I think he's like 22 or 23, so he could be a decent depth forward. But he could also turn out to just be a much younger Tara Lewis.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's also maybe not the difference maker that we're looking for.
Right.
So speaking of, and speaking of the forwards with speed and potential, we did see the Kings sort of focus on that position at the draft. We got some pushback when we took Keandre Miller in the SB Nation mock draft because he's a defenseman. A lot of people wanted to see us go forward, and I imagine they were very happy with the way the draft went down. The Kings focused a little bit on speed and upside. Did you, Robin, did you get to catch the draft? And whether or not you did you think that was the right approach for the Kings, going after speed?
I caught day one, so the first round on Friday night, but I didn't really pay attention to day two. But I do like that their big thing was focus on speed, but guys who can also finish. Because it's not so much the speed, mm-hmm. which yes, the foot speed has been lacking over the years, but it's primarily every year we get to March and we're still saying, how are these guys so bad at scoring?
And it is, as you a phrase you used earlier, beating a drum by this point. And it's, I think that's a good call, trying to find that type of player. Sarah, I know you you tracked day two a little bit more. Was there a pick on Saturday of the draft that you were particularly excited about?
Akil Thomas. He was projected to be a first rounder. Some people had him in the late first round. I think there were some mock drafts that actually had him going to the Kings in the first round. I think that he could be this year's steal in the draft of someone who fell a little lower and ended up in the Kings' basket. Also, both of the goalies I think are interesting. I watched a little bit of St. Cloud during Frozen Four and everything. I almost said Frozen Fury, which is something entirely different. he was, still raw as a younger player, but definitely helped carry St. Cloud to, dominate their, division or conference or however the NCAA defines it. And also the kids they picked, Jacob Ingham from Mississauga, had a terrible year this year. Just his whole game seemed to have collapsed. But, the Kings love goalie projects, and he has the skill. A lot of people who watch and track goalies, thought that, despite a rough year, that he's someone who, if he gets, his head back around the game, could end up being a really good goalie project. So I think that, a goalie who's having kind of a disastrous season and needs to kind of start from scratch, even though he won't be working directly with the Kings, we'll kind of have the resources of, their staff and, direction from them as to what they want him to work on. So if he ends up being a pro, who knows, but it might help Mississauga too, even if he doesn't make it. So I think both the goalie picks are going to be interesting to watch and see what happens.
Yeah. And I think the Kings have been running a bit of a goalie grift on the rest of the league in recent years, what with their unparalleled ability to take a backup goalie and flip him for something useful. So it is interesting to see them sort of double down on that this year in the draft, and especially since for the first time in a while they've got a younger player who is looked at legitimately a possible future start for this team. So the draft was a bit boring for most observers in terms of intrigue on day one. We knew who was going number one. We knew who was going number two by the time the draft started, and the rest of the teams were pretty quiet in terms of making moves. But after Kovalchuk started things off on day two, I don't think we cared about that too much. So let's go over what that sort of means for the prospect pool now. So the Kings are obviously well stocked when it comes to their forwards. The defensemen, they've got a few guys that are closer to the NHL. Daniel Brickley expected to make the jump this year. Hopefully maybe the year after that. And development camp has started today, and we're getting a look at some of these guys in action for the first time. Robin, other than been Rasmus Kapari, the first round pick for the Kings. Is there anyone that you're keeping an eye on at development camp or over the summer?
No, not really. I honestly don't really know who most of those guys are. Like, just kind of keep an eye on Clegg and some of the other younger guys. I don't know if Spencer Watson is in development camp this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he would be because he played in the ECHL last year, but he would be an interesting one to watch if he was at dev camp this year, but I don't think he is.
Well, points for honesty, I guess. I mean, if you're looking for Gabe Vilardi to make the jump, do you think that development camp is something that's going to make or break him, or are you going to be paying a much more closer eye on the preseason?
Development camp rarely makes or breaks a guy. I think Toffoli and Pearson both went through development camp like either the year before or the year that they both made the jump. But really, we all know it comes down to September. None of these guys in development camp are expected to put on a big show. Like, you can impress the coach, like one Nick Shoreboy. But beyond
sure.
that, you're not really expected to wow the coaches. You're supposed to be very raw, very moldable in your skills and everything.
I saw Nick Shore pop up in an article about guys who would be good budget signings for teams around the league, and it was like a nice little window into the past. It was nice to think about the asset that Nick Shore once was. Sarah, is there a particular player that you're interested in following along with as development camp goes on?
I mean, I think that, you know, the guys that keep, you know, standing out are the ones who we know are going to be something, you know. So Gabe Vilardi and Jared Anderson Dolan both have gotten kind of good reviews from people who've been watching. I think that of the defensemen, because I feel like they have a lot of defensemen guys who have aged out of juniors and are now going to be fighting for spots in Ontario. I think that really the one to keep an eye on for right now is Kiel Clegg. I think the other ones are all going to need a little more seasoning in Ontario. I think that a lot of the good prospects are still making their way into being able to kind of keep up with this level. I think it's just kind of the big guys of AKA who are other teams asking for in trades. They're who we want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and as we said, that list is not as long as I think we would hope. So heading into the summer, we also got the NHL awards last week, and we saw Anze Kopitar win a Selke. We saw Jonathan Quick win the Jennings Trophy on behalf of the Kings with Jack Campbell backing him up literally and figuratively. And we saw Kopitar come up short for the Hart and Doughty come up short for the Norris. Robin, when it comes to the awards, what were you expecting? Did everything go the way you planned? Did you expect Kopitar to come in third and Doughty to come in second and Kopitar to win the Selke?
Wasn't quite sure where Kopitar would land. I mean, he had an amazing season, but you also can't deny the seasons that Nathan MacKinnon and Taylor Hall, MVP Taylor Hall, the incredible seasons mm-hmm. that they had as well. Doughty, you never quite know. As much as I thought he had a decent year, I also thought that Nikita Kucherov was way better and really deserved the Norris.
Oh, you mean Victor Hedman.
That's what I meant. I said Nikita Kucherov, but it's the other Tampa Bay Lightning guy.
Yeah, the one who also maybe had a shot at a trophy, maybe. don't worry, we got you. Sarah, do you think Kopitar deserved more love for the Hart?
You know, I think he did, but, you know, he it really was, you know, taking off the, like, Kopitar blinders that I know we all have. Mm-hmm. It was some really stiff competition. And, you know, I can't look at the field of the three of them and be disappointed that he didn't win, because Taylor Hall had, you know, a phenomenal season and was integral to the Devils getting back in the playoffs. I pointed this out in the comments on the post about it, but you know, there was a quote from Ben Lovejoy on the Devils who basically said that everyone on the team knew that, you know, Taylor Hall was the team, that, like, they would not have done what they did without Taylor Hall. And, you know, that is what the MVP heart is about, is who is the most important player on your team. And I think that as Kings fans, we have the luxury of riches of, you know, we also have Drew Doughty and we also have Jonathan Quick. And can you say that, you know, either of them are, you know, less important or, you know, less integral to the team's success than Anze Kopitar? Like, that's a tough call. So while I wish he had won, because I think that would have been stupendous, I can't say I'm surprised by it, and I can't say that it was necessarily the wrong decision. And also, numerically, I liked the fact that he got 11 votes for first place, and it just, wearing the number 11, it felt, if he wasn't going to win, it at least felt right in my heart to have the numbers make sense.
Yeah, and the fact that he finished third by, I think, 6 points over Giroux, you know, on paper it doesn't mean much, but it was cool to see Anze Kopitar, you know, strut down a red carpet and get interviewed by a tiny child and get, you know, some love for what he's done really well for a long time. And we've talked before about how Anze Kopitar, you know, before winning the Selke a couple years ago, he still hadn't gotten any sort of individual recognition. He got beat out for the Conn Smythe twice, which feels a little silly to complain about at any point after the Kings won a cup. But he was someone who I think always deserves a little bit more love nationally. And even if by the end some people were going, okay, enough already, we get it, it was nice to see sort of a chance for people to argue about Kopitar's merit on a larger scale. With that said, we'll talk before we move on to our last couple topics here. Let's talk about the 2017-18 season as a whole. Robin, what's your biggest takeaway from last year?
Well, I thought it was really interesting that with the new coach, they were still having a lot of the same issues. So, like, okay. Mm-hmm. So they had their excellent 9-grade game winning streak, and then after they lost in Jersey, it's like everything just kind of fell apart. But, I mean, there's still some hope for the future. Like, I don't want to be all negative. I know that's my brand, but honestly, I think that there is a lot of potential in the upcoming season, but I do think that it's going to be interesting how John Stevens decides to tweak his system, because it felt like for the longest time that he was just kind of using like a combination of Perry Murray and Daryl Sutter, and that was just a mess.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, same question to you. Anything in particular you're taking away from the last year of Kings hockey?
You know, I think that, I mean, like, kind of like Robin said, that there were flashes of moments where you were like, oh, this is something new and fresh, and then you would blink, and then they'd play a couple games, and you're like, oh, this, Daryl Sutter, where are you? Like, are you hiding behind the bench? What happened? So I think it'll be interesting to see, especially if there are going to be, you know, some changes in personnel and some new faces, if they can actually play more cohesively this year. You know, they definitely relied a lot on Kopitar to put pucks in nets, which was great for him, but not so great for everyone else. You know, I think that, you know, there were a lot of great moments, you know, celebrating Dustin Brown and the now lost somewhere in Canada, Marin Gaborik, like the four goal games, you know, and I think Jeff Carter randomly had a hat trick for some reason. You know, seeing what they're going to do with the whole season of Jeff Carter, the fact that they got into the playoffs with him missing, you know, 2/3 or however the math works out of the season, you know, was kind of remarkable that, you know, the team managed to pull it together and players were kind of forced to be in roles that they didn't necessarily think that they were going to be in. So in that respect, you know, seeing new faces get integrated in and, you know, Adrian Kempe becoming a full-time player and, you know, Mike Amadio basically winning a roster spot was nice to see. And not what we've seen from the Kings a lot in the past few years. So, you know, that's kind of my takeaway is that last season was a lot of let's try something new, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And maybe this season it will work more.
Yeah, and I think every year of the last, you know, it's easy to say why we remember 2012 and or 2011, 2012 and 2013, 2014. But in more recent years, we've had to search for, you know, other things to remember. And we remember 2015 as the hangover year. We remember 2016 as, if not the Lucic year, at least the Doughty and Kopitar finally get their Norris and their Selke. And 2017 is the year that Sutter and Lombardi met their doom. Robin, what's this? I mean, is this the year of change? Is this the year of Kopitar? Is this the year of Dustin Brown coming back? Like, what do you think you're going to think of this as in like 5 years?
I don't know. I mean, hockey is a weird game, but you really never know what you're going to get. I mean, who knew that Kopitar was going to keep up his third shooting percentage all year and be like, you know what? Just because I got this new contract doesn't mean you can piss off me. You know, and Jeff Carter is like, he turned 30 and he's like, you know what? While most people are going downhill at 30, I'm just going to turn to a beast mode. Where is it coming from, Jeff Carter? I mean, he's been fantastic. But, see, you know, you don't know. And I really don't know what's in store. Maybe this will be the year of the kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. So the other, you know, other teams are going to remember 2018 differently. Primarily Vegas and Washington. Vegas coming out with the expansion season that they had, and Washington finally closing the deal. The Kings, not a very memorable playoffs for them, aside from setting a new an almost new record in scoring futility. It was sort of a playoffs to forget for them, but. After rewatching the playoffs, and watching a team like the Capitals, who was thought maybe to be past their prime, but to get a good goalie performance and a player who is, you know, the best, one of the best the franchise has ever seen, is Sarah, Robin, am I really way too optimistic in trying to tie this to the Kings next season?
There's always room for optimism.
Have you met me?
Good. I'm glad to hear that. If we were to put a percentage on it, and I know this is stupid to do on June 27th before free agency, like, what are the chances that the Kings go on a run next year? Sarah, I'll start with you.
Like, 35%? I'm bad with numbers.
We're not supposed to be bad with numbers. We're jewels from the crown, Sarah.
There was no number portion when I signed up for this.
Fair. Robin, are you more or less optimistic than that?
Hey, you stole my line, Sarah. I was going to say, nobody told me numbers that were gonna, or math was going to be involved. I'm going to go with the very optimistic 50-50. It could go either way.
I like it. That's strong. And I'm glad you're all not mad at me for not preparing you for the numbers portion of this broadcast. So finally, before we get to the end of the show, just a couple of the other news stories that are going around. First of all, it went up on the site today, but Willie O'Ree is finally getting the call from the Hall of Fame, along with several others. And we wrote about Willie O'Ree a couple years ago about his sort of connection to SoCal hockey. He was a longtime member of the Los Angeles Blades. He moved on to the San Diego Goals for and combined between LA and San Diego, he played something like 12 or 13 years. And he does have a banner up in San Diego's arena. And I didn't know about that until I wrote about it 2 years ago. But, if you haven't read the stories that are coming out about Willie O'Ree over the last couple of days from these different angles, more about his life beyond, you know, playing a season for the Boston Bruins in the NHL, you know, it's obviously worth reading. And it's about time that he got in. Sarah, any thoughts on O'Ree's appointment other than how overdue it is?
Yeah, I mean, the main reaction is like, what in the world took so long? I mean, we know what took so long, but you know, whatever. I think that it's good that it happened. You know, there was a quote from him that basically said something to the effect of, like, I'm glad I was still alive to celebrate it. And I was like, excuse me, I need to go, like, lie face down, because that's horrible that he, like, knew in his mind that, like, he could have passed away not having been honored by the league. You know, I think that he, you know, is someone who's done, you know, phenomenal work, and I wish that, you know, there were more people out, like, you know, the league talks a lot about, you know, fostering, you know, underserved and minority communities and, you know, wanting to have better representation. And, you know, sometimes it feels a little cheap that they just kind of trot Willie O'Ree out for everything. But, you know, it would be nice if they had more people that they could, you know, bring out as well to be like, look, we have more diversity. But, you know, he takes his job and his role there very seriously as, you know, a face of the league and their diversity efforts. So, you know, I think it was a long time coming. You know, the Hockey Hall of Fame is not the NHL Hall of Fame. It is for hockey in general.
Sure.
Just really excited to see. There's on the site, the post that went up today, there's a couple articles linked that talked a lot about how this was basically a grassroots effort, and people wrote people from his hometown that basically compiled like a 75-page booklet to send to the Hall of Fame committee people, in support of his nomination, from people from, you know, P.K. Subban's dad, Carl Subban, Joel Ward wrote a letter. I think Wayne Simmons might have submitted something, politicians, people from, you know, his hometown in Canada, people who he's made an impact on. So really just, you know, kind of inspiring to see everyone coming together to say, like, yes, this is your time. And I'm afraid it's getting a little overshadowed by everyone being perplexed about Gary Bettman. You know, it's a little bit of a shame that he had his moment in the sun for 30 seconds, and then someone was like, oh, P.S., Gary Bettman's going in this year, too. And then all the hot takes are about that now.
Yeah, and thankfully we're still getting plenty about O'Ree, and I think everyone is sort of seeing the big story here. Robin, anything else to add on the announcement?
Well, I was going to talk about Bettman, but once again, Sarah brought it up. Thanks, Sarah.
Well, go ahead. You know what? So let's actually talk about that then, because we saw Gary Bettman as one of the inductees as a builder. Dan Carcillo and Nick Boynton both came out sort of arguing that the honor maybe wasn't deserved because Bettman hasn't done enough to address head injuries in the league. And, of course, others point out the more obvious contribution, which is the lockouts recently. Robin, your thoughts?
So Wyshynski, they picked this, you know, as you will, but he was like I don't think it. Well, he said Gary Bettman is a Hall of Famer, no question. And I'm like, why? What is the no question? What has Gary Bettman done to deserve to be inducted into the Hall of Fame? All he's managed to do is not screw up the league for 25 years. I wish to God he would retire, but he really enjoys being the villain of this story of the NHL. But, you know, more to the point, what Sarah was saying earlier, I'm just really disappointed that Gary Bettman is overshadowing this incredible moment for Willie O'Ree. This should be a Hall of Fame to celebrate Willie O'Ree. This should be something that we should be all stoked about. And instead, we're talking, we're debating the merits of whether or not Gary Bettman deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And it's like, well, should he be in now? Should he be in later? Doesn't matter. He should. Well, I guess it does matter. It matters because we should be talking about Willie O'Ree and not Gary Bettman. Once again, the white guy makes it all about himself.
And in fairness to Bettman, I don't know if he argued for this himself, but yeah, I think like you said, I think this is you know, with apologies to Martin Brodeur and Marty St. Louis and Alexander Yakushev and Gina Hefford. The stories coming out of this are O'Ree and Bettman. One more note about Willie O'Ree. Akil Thomas, who was, as we mentioned, the Kings' second-round pick this year, actually appeared in a movie called Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future, which is a film about the history of black players in hockey. And Thomas has said, exact quote, it was special to him to be involved in that because it was cool to commemorate Willie O'Ree for everything that he's done for the sport of hockey. So it's a, you know, it's a cool little parallel, as the name of the movie is, Past, Present, and Future. So keep an eye out for the Hockey Hall of Fame induction there, and we'll see how the story ends for Willie O'Ree at the Hockey Hall of Fame. I think that's pretty much all we have to talk about tonight. What with us having discussed the draft and free agency and, of course, Ilya Kovalchuk. We will be back on the JewelCast in a week or two. July 1st is the start of free agency. We do expect the Kings to be quiet, but there's always the chance they make a move, and we'll have to see how where other players turn out. We have already seen where Jack Johnson is going to end up, apparently, as he has been linked to a 5-year deal with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So let's end with Jack Johnson thoughts. Robin?
That's all I got. Just endless tackling.
All right, great. Sarah?
Good luck and Godspeed, Pittsburgh. There were moments at the end of last season where it was clear that he was not going to work out in Columbus, that people kept floating him as a trade possibility, and I was like, do I need to get on an airplane and go, like, find Rob Blake and sit on his car until he agrees not to do anything about this? I mean, from a personal human perspective, good on you, Jack Johnson. Like, go get that money. But, oh, Pittsburgh, oh boy. That's good luck.
Yeah, we don't usually get the sort of possible mistake signing this early in free agency. And like you said, good for Jack Johnson. You know, you can't fault a guy for taking that security. And hey, we all laughed at Derek Englund signing a few years ago, and now he's leading Vegas to the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, I think there's a decent chance that this ends with Jack Johnson lifting a Stanley Cup in a Penguins jersey because he's a Pittsburgh Penguin. But that's just the fun of free agency. We'll have to see how everything goes and if the Kings stay out of the madness a little bit on July 1st. Maybe that's just for the best. So we'll cap it there. We'll talk to you all again in the next week or two. Sarah and Robin, thanks again for joining me, and everybody have a good night.
Thank you.